Put in the other one. Do we have a quorum? I'm sorry.
It appears that we're 100% now.
Okay, great. Well, 6:02, I'll call the meeting to order. And we had a chance to review and approve the minutes of last meeting.
Yes, I make a motion to approve as written.
Have a second.
Eric seconded.
Second from Eric. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye, raise the hands. I think Eric and Ace, you guys are muted too. Feel free to jump in here. So next up, we have liaison reports. And, Councillor Jensen, how are things in your world?
How are things in City Hall?
How are things
The new city manager is getting his feet on the ground and has not let any grass grow under his feet. So that's a good thing. Our meetings have been actually kind of boring lately because we just done some pretty mundane things, like a pretty significant transformer purchase that we approved for the electrical department, pretty significant chemicals for the wastewater treatment plant. We approved the design to begin the design process of the major North Mountain rehab project, which has been on the planning books and the CIP for a couple years now, and it's actually going to start to happen this summer. So that's just think of the Hersey Street disruption, and just transfer that over to Mountain, North Mountain, and it's going to be a similar type. There's railroads to cross, there's bridges, there's creeks to cross, there's ADA considerations, there is a new on-ramp, emergency on-ramp at the tail end of Mountain. And so it's going to be a significant project for a really busy street. And particularly the fact that that area has grown so much out there, Kestrel Park and Mountain Meadows and so on. The last thing I want to mention is, there's a pretty significant tree removal project going on on city owned lands right now. Chris Chambers has written up, some of you are aware of it. If you are aware of it, and have been brought up to speed, that's great. If not, I think it'd be useful, Aaron, possibly if you could send out Chris's, communication, that he sent out, to council and to the general public on that, and maybe copy the commissioners on that just so they are aware that it's happening, because it's a significant removal mainly of beetle kill ponderosa pines. There's going to be several log trucks coming out of the watershed this spring, is my understanding. But there's Chris has a great rationale for it, and it's sad. It's a function of the drought, which, as you folks well know, weakens trees and makes them susceptible to bug kill. And unfortunately, we haven't seen the last of it. And the last thing I would ask you all to do is to get out and do a rain dance at some point in the next couple of weeks, because our window is rapidly closing for a significant rain, and boy, do we need it, as you all well know. So that concludes the report. Any questions that I could possibly enlighten you on?
Do you have any links to a rain dance?
I'm sure if you went to YouTube and did rain dance, that you would be overwhelmed, I'm sure. But nothing right offhand, but if that's what it took, I would not only provide it, I would do it.
Me too. I agree.
Even in terms of, I was looking at the reservoir level the other day, it looks like it's up to about maybe 65%. What happens if we go into the dry season with it at that level? How quickly is the city planning to recommend or enforce restrictions on irrigation?
I believe either at this study session coming up or at the council meeting, very, very shortly, Scott Furry is going to give us a full-blown water report about what that looks like and what the you know, what the constraints are. There is an irony relative to
Oh, did he freeze? Or he's really thinking? Sorry, we lost you there, Stephen, after the word irony.
Okay. Am I back yet?
Yep.
Okay. Yes. Okay. The irony is the Corps of Engineers requires a certain capacity in the springtime for certain dams in certain locations. And in order to, for flood control purposes. So we're required to keep that level down probably longer than possibly is wise relative to water storage, but our whole licensing FEMA Corps of Engineers structure requires that. I don't know if Scott's going to be able to get any kind of a dispensation this year or not, but we'll get that report next week, and I will bring that to you. In fact, I think what I might do is get that to Aaron and have Aaron disseminate it to you guys even before the next month's meeting.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And how about you, Peter, from Parks and Rec?
I wanted to follow up on one thing Stephen was talking about, the hillside above Lithia Park. Some of you may have already noticed is being thinned for dead ponderosa pines right now. Grayback forestry is doing that. There's, I think, between 100 and 200 dead pines just in the last year. So that's an ongoing process there, as it is in some other places. I think that's just the vegetation is going to change there. Eventually, I think we'll have very few pines remaining there, but unfortunately it's a hot, dry hillside, and it's the weather's been taking its toll, drought and heat. So that's happening there now. And other thing I wanted to mention, we mentioned last time, talked a little bit about our Arbor Day tree planting. So I've been discussing that with Eric a bit, and he's going to bring a tree, and we found a place at Hunter Park. And just to throw out a date, tentative date, I was thinking Friday, April 8th. Our next tree commission meeting is Thursday the 7th, so that would be the next day, maybe around midday, mid-morning. And I'll get in touch with you by email in the meantime. But if anyone has if that's a problem, not everyone has to go to that either, of course. It's a low-key event, but just to kind of give you an idea of something, we'll have a little event then and there, so... But I'll be in touch about that. Great. And feel free, any of you, to, if you have any input, if that doesn't work or another time. But yeah, that's about all I've got right now.
Great. With the pines that are being thinned, are they leaving all the debris to be piling and burning, or
they're piling to burn right now, and the all the brush will be burned, and the logs are going to remain on the ground, I believe, on those. They score the bark to try to, I think, unfortunately, the beetle, as you know, it's really late to do anything about controlling the beetles at this point. They're all over the place, but just at least it gets the dead ones out of there and maybe reduces fire danger and hazard a bit. So it's, yeah, tough situation.
Is there an estimation of about what percentage of the ponderosas are being struck and dead, or majority, or?
Right. It's, well, It's not a majority this year. I don't actually have a percentage. I probably should. I would guess somewhere in the neighborhood, 10 to 20% of them.
Okay.
This year, and this is, like I say, this has been going on for some time now. So that's a good idea, though, to try to maybe get some numbers on that. Someone might have those that I'm not aware of.
The study came at OSU a number of years ago that were basically modeling climate change and species migration, and they were predicting that ponderosa pine would no longer be living in this area.
That's
Anna again.
Sure sounds plausible, given what's happening in our lower elevations around here.
Yep, serious change, the landscape.
Right. It is.
Peter, was there any thought about leaving some of the standing dead for bird habitat?
That is something we've done. And I think on this round, they're taking them down from the ground. But I've gone through, we sometimes will cut them about in half or so and leave a habitat stob. So there's some of that has been done and will be done, but yeah, I'll try to make sure some of that does take place. I know it's good to leave some of those.
Yeah, I think it'd be cool. Yeah, I mean, I think leaving them on the ground is a great idea too for the salamanders and stuff. But yeah, cool. All right, well, thank you.
The you know, the really amazing pantry tree that the woodpeckers use on Glenview. It's it's almost solid holes. It's
is that up near Strawberry?
No, it's on the other side. It's below Terrace.
Is that one dead now too, or is that still?
Well, the pantry tree is. It's been topped years ago, and it's just pretty much a stump. But it's looking like it's slowly leaning, and the very large ponderosa behind it looks to be dying too.
Oh yeah, okay, I know. Yeah,
and that would be a really good candidate for leaving, as that in the current pantry tree falls, which it will pretty soon,
right?
They can start just moving it straight to that tree right there. But
that's a good idea. I know what you're talking about. That one's leaning over the road now, and the bigger tree is dead, so that would be a good one to leave for habitat.
I did notice a couple of really big Doug firs that looked pretty healthy that had fallen up on Snark Trail. I don't know what knocked them over. The other thing I was noticing was down on the Oak Flat area, just downstream of the North Mountain Park, the new planting that they're doing along there, I guess it's
The Freshwater Trust
people are doing. Right. They're planting a lot of, looks like little cedars. Is that right?
Yeah, some cedars, a lot of little, I think, alders, some pines. Yeah, they're trying to get a mix in there. Yeah, hundreds of them.
Yeah.
Real small ones in there, so I think. And trying to displace the blackberries and get some native vegetation back in there. So, yeah, that's been a nice project.
And do you know what they're planning to plant in the Ashland Pond area where all those millions of little flags are?
I think alders, probably ashes, probably some pines and maybe cedars. And we're talking about the pines not making it that
much. Yeah. All right, thank you.
Great. Thank you, Peter. Anything to update us on, Aaron?
Nothing really significant. It feels like we're getting closer and closer to returning to normal, although I haven't gotten any word on when we'll be opening to the public again. It feels like we'll probably be following what the state is doing. for myself personally, I've begun the process of moving back to the office, and I'm kind of looking forward to that. That's about it for now.
Great. All right. Well, before we get into the reviews, it sounds like we have applicants here for the second and third applications. And just a note, too, so I do have another commitment at 7:30, but I also need to recuse myself from the Rogue Valley Burroughs and Crafters Market agenda items. Maybe we can move that to the bottom in case I'm running short on time. But everybody's okay with that. We'll move forward with the reviews. So this is the time and place for the Tree Commission review portion of the land use public hearing. If you wish to speak at the hearing, please keep your comments and testimony limited in scope to issues, comments, or concerns pertaining to the landscaping and trees. The following procedure will be used in this hearing. The public hearing will be open, and those interested in stating their positions regarding the matter to be considered will be invited forward to speak. During the public hearing portion, all who wish to give testimony regarding the specific application are encouraged to do so. If you wish to speak for, against, or comment in any way, please come forward to the table at the appropriate time, give your name, address, and make your statement. At the beginning of the public hearing, staff will present its report on the action and conditions of approval. At this time, commissioners will have the opportunity to ask staff questions. Next, after the staff report, the applicant and applicant's representative will have 15 minutes to present the proposal. The commissioners may ask questions of the applicant without affecting the 15 minutes allocated. Other members of the audience will be allowed to speak regarding the application and shall be limited to 5 minutes each. Those wishing to testify should be called forward and give testimony. Next, the staff will then be given an opportunity to respond to any question of the commission or any matter which has been raised. And lastly, the applicant will then have 5 minutes of rebuttal time, after which the public hearing portion will be closed. So I'd like to call to order planning action, tree 2022-00182. This is at 364 Walker Avenue at Walker Elementary. The applicant is Carrie Cairn. Owner is Ashland School District. This is a request to modify the recent site design review approval for Walker Elementary, planning action T2-2021-00028. At 364 Walker Avenue to allow the removals of four trees which were previously identified to be preserved and protected. These removals are proposed in response to changes in site grading and stormwater line placement in response to issues identified once site work was underway. Do we have any staff site visits on this one or need for abstentions? Okay, Aaron, maybe bring us up to speed. I know we've obviously all seen this before, but.
Yeah, you know what? I actually don't have anything more to add in the blurb, and I would just hand it over to Carrie.
Okay. Welcome, Carrie.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for hearing me. So I guess I want to preamble by saying, when I enter into these projects, there's this balance between trying to maximize the number of trees that I propose to be saved versus I don't even know how to put that. It's like I always ask for more trees to be saved than I probably should, because that's my agenda when I'm operating as a landscape architect, especially on a big commercial project or institutional one. And in this case, two of these trees I probably was being overly optimistic on, and those are the two that are on the project lower left that are by the kindergarten, the corner of the building. And I don't remember if that's in the two in the 60s or the two in the 30s. I'm sorry, I don't have the drawings in front of me. But there's two large trees. One is a platanus and the other one is a maple, and they're beautiful trees. But the excavation for the foundation of the building is, and the depth of the finished floor of the building, and this is where I probably would take responsibility for just not catching this. Finished floor of the building is 5 feet below the trunk flare of the tree. And I think if that wasn't the case, if the finished floor was higher up, it wouldn't be an issue, but it's this impossible grade change to deal with and to save the trees. So we actually went ahead and excavated the foundation line and went in and looked at all of it and have been, you know, taking care of the roots and doing all of this and in an attempt to honor my initial preservation plan. And it's just, it's not going to work. So those are the two trees that are over by the lower, this, I guess it's the southwest corner of the building. Then another thing that occurred that nobody knew about was that there's the storm lines that run between the buildings currently are non-functional and need to be replaced. And there was two trees that are between the gym and the old building that I was showing to be preserved. And they're not great trees. I mean, it's not that they're bad trees. They're not beautiful specimens. But they need to do a major excavation between those two buildings. So that's the reality of those four trees. Two of them I should have known better, and two of them nobody would have known because we didn't know that the stormwater system was not going to function. So in, as you can see on the proposal for it, we're proposing to replace with eight trees, trying to honor the Tree Commission's desire to see some evergreens in there. We've added some evergreens, three evergreens, and then five deciduous trees that are in the courtyard or in between those two buildings. And I didn't want to put anything too large in there because I don't want it to end up being a problem in the future where those trees overgrow the space that we have for them. So that's what's going on, and that's a modification of our original approval.
Okay, thank you. And just for clarity, looking at these plans, are they the ones highlighted in green?
The ones highlighted in green are the ones I'm proposing to put in to install.
Gotcha.
For the four that are coming up.
I see. How about the ones, the new removals? They're probably
just. If you look at the original plan, the new removals have a red cloud around them.
Okay.
And
I guess I can look up the number too.
Actually, in the legend, the numbers with the trees have a small red cloud boxed around them, and they were colored. And I don't know; they didn't seem to be colored in your packet, so. It may have been a miscommunication between me and planning, but I tried to do the same thing, which is basically show the ones that are coming out in one color and then the ones to go in a different color, because I know it's hard to see these things at the scale you end up looking at them. I can bring them up I have them on my computer. If you want, I can bring them up on my screen and share that if you need it.
I think I'm getting there. Are most of them like the big platanus, is that in the courtyard or in those?
No, the big platanus is down on the home's frontage.
Oh, okay.
So the platanus and the maple are down along Home Street between the new building and homes.
Gotcha.
And then the other two that are coming out is a liriodendron and I can't remember the fourth one.
I found them.
But they're between the gym and the old building. So courtyard, basically.
It looks like there's still some trees remaining.
Oh, yeah.
In that courtyard between the gym and the old building.
Absolutely. Not between the gym and the old building. There's the tree. There's only one tree that's actually in between those two buildings, and it's coming out or proposed to come out.
Doesn't seem to me like there's much wiggle room here anyway.
Unfortunately, no. I mean,
it's we can make this decision fast or we can make it slowly. If the outcome is going to be different, right? Unless we wanted to recommend different species, right?
And we're open.
How far away is the excavation from the trees? You know, if it's 5 feet below the trees, how far away?
Oh, like 6 feet.
Looks pretty tight on the drawing.
It's really tight.
I don't know if you...
Not from, like, in particular... I think it... Is it possible to share screen with me, Aaron?
You're able to share right now. Yep.
Okay, it's going to take me a second to find it. So
I have your submittal available, but if you want to navigate me.
Let's look at the, let's see. Not that, yeah, that will work.
Okay.
Up, back, this one. So.
Sorry, this one, correct?
Yeah, so if you look, that's the original tree removal plan. Can you just let me have the pointer?
Boy, how do I do that?
I don't know. Think you can do that.
Along the south, along Holmes, right?
Anyway, it's the two that are not shown to be removed that are closest to the building. And the one on the left.
These two here carry with them?
No. There's one there that's closest to the corner of the building, and that's the Platinus.
Number 32, yeah.
And then over to the right is the maple, and those two, the building is actually further towards those trees than is obvious. I mean, if you looked at this, you would agree. It's like, oh yeah, we can save those trees. But the excavation is so, what happens is the excavation is so deep, and because of OSHA rules, there has to be a lot of distance between the back of the future wall and the bank that they cut, and then there has to be a slope on the bank. So it's all about safety of the people that have to get in there and do the formwork. So the excavation goes beyond what you would think. And that's where I made a mistake. It's like I constantly, that one just bothers me that's it's like it's me fighting against OSHA. So the excavation is actually within 6 feet of the tree on the right, and 5 feet down, and not quite as severe as on the tree on the left, but it
is Platinus. Is that the genus for sycamore?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I did see a sycamore and the excavation was pretty close to it. And I was like, wow, they didn't really protect that tree too well. But
yeah, it's just, it's really close.
If the tree does come down, then are they going to like slope it, or is that grade going to,
we're going to have to slope the grade back to the street. But right now, if we tried to slope it, we'd be cutting into the roots. It's like there's just no way to make that transition.
So all those trees between the street and the excavation are going, if it's being sloped?
No, it's just those two. We feel two. Like we can take care of the other ones that are not being identified to be removed. But those two are so close to the building that their root system is where the slope has to occur.
Yeah, okay.
Any other questions?
It's because of worker safety, right?
That they need partially, and you know, it's operator error. I mean, I take responsibility for those two trees. I was being overly optimistic, and I will probably see you again doing the same thing, because I'd rather be overly optimistic and find that there's no way to do it, then say, oh yeah, we're going to take them out. So
yeah.
It's, you know, it's somewhat embarrassing, but just reality.
Well, they would have had to come out anyway, even if you wouldn't have, you know, so
there was a possibility that they wouldn't.
Yeah.
And we came up against it.
Yeah. I don't think you can do, there's nothing you can do.
No.
That's the way I see it. But.
Well, I think, yeah. And like I said, the stormwater thing, I talked to them about boring under the trees instead of excavating down. And part of the problem is there's also the lines for the, for a heat system, go through there, and they can't. It has to be laid from the top. It can't go through a conduit. So we explored a bunch of other options in that location, and there's really no other thing to do.
Okay, any other questions or for Carrie or Aaron? Okay, we'll close the public hearing portion. Thank you, Carrie. Thanks for trying. Later.
Thanks.
Bye.
My only thoughts would be, how do the tree knowledgeable people feel about the replacement mitigation trees, the selection of those? Do they seem like good choices?
Vanderwolfs do well here. I'm not as familiar with the Silverbell. Do you guys know that one?
Silverbell? It's from like Carolina native, I think.
Is it a tree or?
It's a tree. It could be multi-branch. It's a smaller stature tree. It's actually pretty when it blooms. It's a pretty nice tree. I think it'd work well there.
Vanderwolves are pretty and seem to do, really well here. I haven't removed a dead one yet. Although I did see one with beetles in it, quite young anyway, but it came back.
What variety was that, Chris?
The Vanderwolf, the Flexus Vanderwolf pine.
You say a pine? I like
those trees, but.
Yeah, it's what they're proposing is for mitigation trees.
Yeah, on the agenda packet I got, everything's black and white. I can't tell what's what. So the print is so small, too. It's like, whoa.
Yeah, this was more in the narrative up above. They list the 8 mitigation trees.
Oh.
3 Vanderwolfs, 8 to 10 feet tall, and 5 Carolina Silverbells, 1.3 quarter caliper.
Those are big trees.
Yeah.
That's a big, big tree to put in at the start. I have a Vanderwolf. I love those trees. I don't know the beetle situation. I've had one in my front yard for probably 20 years, and it's done really well. That's what I have to go by. I've planted a few. I've never had to take one out, but Chris and Asa, you guys would know more about that than I would. I mean,
yeah, I'm the same. I don't think we've removed a dead one. Again, that was kind of the one anomaly I saw. It had beetles and it survived. But anyway.
Well, I'm ready to make a motion.
Go for it.
I motion to approve the application as submitted.
I second that.
A third.
Favor? Aye.
Aye.
I'm opposed. Motion carries. Thank you. All right. So we're moving on to call to order planning action tree 2021. Nope. I'm sorry. I'm going to go to the Water Street for the type 2 review. Planning action T. I'm correct in that, Aaron? Nobody's here from that? Okay. Okay. Planning action T2 2022 00037. This is at 165 Water Street and 160 Hellman Street and 95 NS, corner of NS and Water Streets. The applicant is Rogue Planning and Development Services for Magnolia Investment Group and Gil Livney. This is a request for an 8-lot commercial subdivision to construct a phased mixed-use development for 3 properties at the corner of NS and Water Street, including 95 NS Street, 165 Water Street, and 160 Hellman Street. Applicants phase 1 request site design review approval for 5 mixed use buildings consisting of 2 ground floor commercial spaces with 2 residential units above in each building, as well as associated surface parking, utility infrastructure, and street improvements. Remaining 3 building sites will be developed in a later phase. Application also includes a request for physical environmental P&E constraints review permit because the proposal includes a development on severe constraints lands with slopes greater than 35%. And on floodplain corridor lands. a request for an exception to the development standards for hillside lands, a request for tree removal permit to remove 20 trees on the three subject properties and within the adjacent right-of-way, a request for an exception to the site design and design standard to allow 3,087 square feet of plaza space, where the standards require 5,624 square feet, and a request for an exception to street standards to allow parking bays with street trees and bump outs along Van Ness Avenue rather than standard park row planting strips. Anything to add to that, Aaron?
Not really much to add to that. I would highlight that, you know, there's a memo from Derek at the beginning of the package. The main elements that you're evaluating, of course, are the 20 removals and then the 16 street trees and the landscaping. And of course, Amy and Sam are here to represent the application.
Aaron, I thought we made an approval on this property.
Changed quite a lot.
Yeah, this is come before different. You before. I'm not sure which iteration you would have seen it, and Amy can actually speak to the planning approval history of this better than I can, because I believe the last actual approval predates my employment with the city.
It's been some years. Okay.
Evening, commissioners.
Evening. How are you, Amy?
I'm good, thanks. Let me share my screen with you. Oh, I'll answer your question quick. So there has been, there's essentially three properties here that have had different ownerships over the years. So you've possibly seen about 43,000 square foot mixed use hotel building on the water in Van Ness, half of the property, so the lower portion. And that essentially proposed all new street trees on water and then removed all the trees from the site to plant new trees. You also may have seen in about 2018 a development for the Van Ness-Hellman intersection. And that was a three-story mixed-use commercial building. And it proposed taking out some of the trees on Hellman in the park row, and then removing the trees on the hillside that it was impacting. So now this development is for all of the property and essentially removing all those same trees that had been previously approved for removal and removing the street trees to replant. And if you went by and did a site visit, you'd probably agree about the condition of the street trees and needing some rehabilitation through mitigation. So I will share my screen with you all now. Okay, can you see my screen?
Yes.
Okay. So that the view you can see is the intersection of Van Ness on your left and Hellman on your right. Hellman Street has a pre-existing landscape park row, and it, let me get my little pointer. Here is Hellman Street's park row, and this is that public alley. So these trees are proposed for removal here, and then these trees are proposed for removal. These trees, these. This one's dead. This one was very questionable, and that one's proposed for removal. And then we have a more detailed list. So the property is zoned employment. This is employment zoned property. This means it's a residential overlay, the purple hashing. There's multifamily property across the street on Hellman. And then there's commercial properties to the south. Again, Hellman. This is the public alley. On Water Street, it's employment zone properties, and then multifamily. This is Oak Street, and then this is Van Ness here. And you've got employment, industrial, a tiny little bit of employment with no residential overlay, and then the multifamily. This map is the environmental overlays map. This is a aerial. This is the old Pyramid Juice building. Here are those street trees. This is the steep slope on the hillside. This is the 500-year floodplain. It's not really a regulatory floodplain. And then this is the Ashland Modified Flood Zone. And then this is the public alley. The alley essentially leads to this parking lot now. And then this is an embankment. As part of this proposal, this alley will be improved and there'll be a stairway to have pedestrian connectivity. Here's a proposed site plan layout. Here's Hellman, Van Ness, water, and then the public alley. So the park row will be essentially rebuilt and repaired. This curb is in poor condition, and there's a number of driveway curb cuts. I want to say 3 or 4 that will be removed, and one driveway curb cut will be replacing it. And then new curb, sidewalk, and then this driveway or the alley apron will be improved, and then the driveway apron. This intersection will need to be rebuilt and rehabbed. So when the trees come in, they'll meet the spacing standards off the intersection. There is, I don't believe there's a street light here. I think there's only one here. So this new street light will also maybe impact this tree. This tree might need to go away because of the street light. And I believe there's going to be a power pole. So we'll have to check that against our civil plan. But this is essentially the layout of the site. Phase one is the upper portion of the property. And primarily that is to allow for construction and staging down here. And then this can be built. And then this parking area will be built. These units will have their parking. Phase one proposes all of the public infrastructure improvements. So when this portion gets built, the street and this lower parking, the sidewalks and so forth will be built out. This is a rendering view of the future phase looking from Water Street here, Van Ness here. Here is our tree removal plan. It looks, you know, fairly dire because there's a lot of trees on it being proposed for removal. The trees that are on the property are not in the most excellent of condition, any of them. There's no like specimen trees. There's mostly poor condition street trees. And then these guys here are some maples. And then there's some fruitless mulberries and oaks on this hillside. Here is a list of the trees that correspond. So I don't know how well this translated in your packet. These are clipped from the L sheets. If you had a lot of, I know you guys got a lot of information in your packet, but this is from the L sheets if you want to focus on it. So what the goal is, and I can let Sam speak more to the landscape layout and design, because this site really did start with a, you know, the property owner, of course, knew what the buildings they wanted were, but then we started working backwards from the site layout. So Terrain Landscape Architecture has come up with a pretty phenomenal landscape layout plan. And I'm going to click forward a few slides so you guys can see what I'm talking about. This is the courtyard area. And then this is the parking area for the upper level of parking. There's integrated seating and stem walls and all sorts of really neat landscape features and stormwater detention, retention, treatment facility and features. So Sam, if you want to join in, I'm going to back up to your,
yeah,
this is his, the plant palette plan. So I'll start here and you can tell me where you want me to go from here.
Okay. Yeah. I think that we can probably just stay on this slide. So I'm sorry, can you all, you can hear me?
Yep. Yes.
Okay, great. So kind of at the beginning of this project, when the developer came to us, we were kind of given this rare opportunity, as Amy said, to kind of drive the development from a landscape perspective. And I'm going to go around, first I'm going to go around the streets and talk about, you know, what we're doing on the streetscape, and then, you know, talk about our connectivity between Water Street and Hellman Street, and then how we're dealing with stormwater and the material that we're putting in the interior of the site. As Amy said, on Hellman Street, the current streetscape is, it's a weed patch with some dead trees, some declining trees, and nothing that's really worth saving. So we're proposing to remove it all, revamp, redo the curb, the sidewalk that's falling, put in all new street plantings, All of those trees, I believe, are they're Red Point maples. And those wrap around up onto Van Ness. Then we have a unit paver between the 8-foot sidewalk and the curb with tree grates with Red Point maples in them. In the park row that we're proposing, we have two of the Autumn Joy white ash in little planters. Over on Water Street, we have green spire maples that'll be put in kind of the same condition. I believe, sorry, I need to look at my plan real quick because I can't quite see. So give me 1 second. Because this is all part of the phase one. But that's the same thing where we have unit pavers, tree grates with the green spire lindens in them. In the alleyway, as Amy said, we're creating a connection with this staircase. We also have a connection between from the Water Street side and the Hellman Street side with another staircase in the middle. That whole kind of middle section we're calling the promenade. That includes the retaining. No, I'm sorry, Amy. I'm talking about like the retaining walls.
Oh, down here.
So we're calling that the promenade, and that's going to be planted primarily tree-wise with I think Loebner magnolias. Just to give, this is the Magnolia Terrace and Magnolia Home, so it's kind of our language that we're repeating across a couple of their developments. In the alleyway, we have the Parodia. Yeah. Moving into the interior of the site, we were able to take a pretty sustainable approach with this. All of our pedestrian paving material is permeable pavers. All of our stormwater is handled through that permeable paver system, as well as the stormwater planters that are located in these like interstitial spaces between each of the buildings. Yes. Yeah. And so, Amy, where your cursor is right there, we have a series of stormwater planters and planters with some, I believe we have dogwoods in there, and the permeable paver base and benches. As we go down into the actual true plaza space, we have there up against the building, there's a stormwater planter that'll have a vine maple in it. There's a triangular planter that's next to the plaza that we're putting in a big specimen magnolia. All of that, you know, all of the experience is really around this pedestrian plaza. And then also we have the permeable paver base for the parking. The idea being that, you know, we have the smaller plaza, which is one of our exceptions, but then we also have this space that we can, you know, we can close off and we can expand and we can use it for events, whether that's like a farmer's market or some kind of a gathering. So it has a more like a more human feel and less of a, you know, this is a parking lot feel when you're in that space. But like I said, and so going back to the site plan, no, you're good. Between the remainder, the little interstitial spaces between the buildings, again, our stormwater planters and benches for people to sit and hang out in. We're removing 20 trees in the phase one part of the project. We're going to put in 34, and then phase two has an additional 12. So we're more than doubling the existing trees on the site. I think that's really what I have to present for our landscape portion.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I do have elevations of the buildings if you guys want to see them. I didn't know if it, you know, how much you wanted to go into the detail of the site review, but essentially these are the different elevations of the buildings as you go from this would be the corner facing Van Ness and Hellman. So this would be the Van Ness facade. And then this side over here is the Hellman facade. This building is downhill Van Ness from the first building. So this one would be to the left of this building, hence the grade change, because there's a topographical change between the site and Van Ness. This is going back up Hellman. We've got buildings 3 and 4. Then there's the public alley. And then building 5 is the one that is off of the alleyway. And I can go back to the site plan. So it went building 1, building 2, building 3, building 4, then building 5 in the alley.
Got it. Thanks, Amy. A lot of neat. I love the permeable surfaces and the stormwater retention and kind of a nice mix of one. Are you willing to do away with the tree grates by chance? We've went on a bit of a crusade. Do you have any options to tree grates?
I mean, we've seen, you know, just using a quarter minus gravel
or DG flush. Or something.
Yeah. Yeah, DG. I think that's something that we could explore doing.
And those and the park row pavers, will that allow roots to expand to? They're porous, right? So
those are not going to be, those are not permeable pavers, those are unit pavers. Mm-hmm. So the way that we approach the irrigation for the trees is that all of the trees will be on their own irrigation zone. They will all have a minimum of 2 of the root zone watering systems. I don't want to kind of speak out of turn on it. So we can definitely look at other options. And if the tree committee has suggestions or things that you prefer, in lieu of tree grates, it's definitely something that we can explore.
Yeah. It's one we've been, it's written in the code, I know. And then we haven't gone with the undertaking of taking it out of the code, but have encouraged folks to find alternatives when that one comes up.
So, what alternatives have you found to work? I know it's probably pretty premature to say.
Yeah, that at its simplest, DG, just giving that area as much soil volume as you can, and the issue with tree grates just being they don't protect the tree for a little while and. Right. More often than not, they get forgotten and end up girdling the tree, and you got to remove the tree.
But, right. Yeah. Right.
Anyway, I thought I'd throw that out there.
No, it's definitely something. But...
Yeah, there's some really great examples of that on Hersey Street. If you go on the, I guess it's the northern side of Hersey Street. If you look at all those oaks that are planted down there, most of them have the grates just end up getting hacked to try and cut and make it bigger and make it bigger, and they end up looking really ugly, and then they get forgotten, and then the trees get girdled, and it's a mess. It's a real mess.
Yeah, it, relying on maintenance and follow up, you know, is always it's not something that we like to do. So if there's an alternative, definitely would be okay with that.
How is the pea gravel pine sap experiment outside of the bank, Wells Fargo Bank, on Main Street? When Ann Thayer was at the Parks Department, they did some sort of like gravel with pine sap and used that in placement of the bricks. I don't know how it's holding up, but I haven't paid attention to it.
I vaguely remember that. I have no idea.
I got a memory like a trap. Watch out.
Okay, that's pretty impressive.
I think that's it's still there. And it looks, I check it out occasionally. It's still doing all right.
This is where again, in front of the Wells Fargo on.
Yep. On East Main, right?
There's a big blue atlas or something up front there. No, I'm on the wrong block. Never mind.
So it was a mixture of pea gravel and pine sap, some kind of matrix that they put on,
mm-hmm.
and then as the tree grows, it just starts to kind of push that out, and it's interesting.
Yeah, and I don't know It seems to have worked. I mean, of all the things that has been tried, I think we should look at it. Maybe that's the solution. And now, Peter, you guys have a solution for all the pine sap that's going to be out of those trees.
Go harvest.
Yeah. Go harvest it. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and I think at its best, we can make the recommendation that the ordinance that requires a tree grate be waived, and would encourage, you know, some research into it, and because you've done everything else so creatively and well thought out, clearly.
Definitely. I know that. So we did at Central Point, in lieu of tree grates, we did like a custom paver system that had DG under it, where we could, as the tree expanded, you could actually start removing pavers, right? Mm-hmm. So that was another thing that we did. But it's a kind of a pilot project. So I want to see how, after it's constructed, how successful it is. But definitely the DG option, or, you know, crushed rock option, quarter inch would be great. And it would save the developer a little bit of money too.
Something sharp and pokey, so people don't stand on it.
Right.
Yeah, those tree grates are expensive too. Right?
Oh yeah, yeah. And like you said, most of the time they're not maintained, they're not cut back, the openings aren't, nobody goes out there and snaps them off or whatever they need to do. So
any other questions for the applicants?
I know this isn't our monkey or circus, but I have to say I'm kind of shocked they're letting you put a building down in that flood zone.
It's
not my business, and I'm not on that commission, but it just seems.
So it's not in a so the blue you saw is the 500 year flood zone. That's not a regulatory flood zone. It doesn't have any protections on it anywhere in the entire country. The black hashed line is called the Ashland Modified Flood Zone. There's not substantive surveys and data behind the adoption of that flood zone. It's sort of a line drawn on the map. When the 1997 flood happened, this property was studied, and the 1997 flood did not enter the property. It was within the curb line of the site. So one of Ashland's biggest floods didn't flood this property. And a lot of the 1997 flooding happened because of the culverts being plugged on Winburn Way, which in theory has now been fixed through the repairs. And even like the Water Street culvert under Main Street, it was engineered before flood engineering, and it pretty much complies with flood engineering standards. They just kind of knew what they were doing back in the early 1900s. So it, like the water that was running down Water Street was coming down the plaza. It wasn't the stuff in the creek. The creek had already been, you know, the Calle had already drained. So the buildings will be required, though, when those buildings come in, to meet floodplain development standards. And what that means is that their finished floors will have to be either elevated, or the buildings have to be floodproofed. And those will go with the site reviews for that portion of the property development.
Thank you.
Wow.
We were just looking at our flood risk yesterday, and it's extreme down there. So it according to the flood zone map. And so I was just surprised. Yeah. It's on my mind. My sister's town is 50 feet underwater right now. So.
Oh. Okay. All right. If there's no other questions, we'll close the public hearing portion. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone here to speak about the project?
I think so.
Aside from Amy and Sam?
Negative.
Well, it'd be nice if they just sell it to the parks and make it a wetland.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's across the corner from the community gardens there, and Yeah. I'm just so surprised that it's going to be three stories. You know, I know we've approved these tree removals in the past, so it's sort of like, okay, well, we already approved them. You know, they haven't been taking better care of them, you know, since that time. So I imagine they've just been even further in decline. But yeah, three stories. You know, we approved the building to the north of the Second Rogue Federal branch, the bank there. And that three stories has blocked the entire horizon. You know, you can't look out anymore. A three stories, the difference between a two-story building and a three-story building is huge as far as how it affects the vibe of a place. So I'd imagine most of those neighbors are going to be like, holy moly, it's going to change the feel. So I'm surprised planning has allowed that, those buildings right on the front of Hellman to be three stories. You know, it's no more sunrise for those houses.
It's across
quite a view too. Are you there?
Yeah. But it seems like things are getting taller and taller, and the Ashen's probably, you know, because we're not sprawling, they're getting better at allowing or mandating taller buildings, I'd imagine.
Right. Urban infill with commercial on the bottom and residential up top.
Yeah.
And no city.
I really like the stormwater planters. Yeah, I think that's great. It's like, as opposed to just getting rid of the water as quick as possible, it's like, hey, let's use it, you know. I like that idea. And the permeable walkways, I like.
What did you think, Eric, from a landscaping perspective?
I thought they did a great job. I was impressed with the whole thing. I love permeable pavers to a certain extent. You have to keep them clean, because if you don't keep them clean, then they fill up with debris and then they don't work. Mm. So, you know, it depends, you know, what happens down the line. And of course, nobody has any control over that. Same way with permeable pavement. They did some of that on a project. That project up on Park Street, they put in permeable paving for parking.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where I learned this. One of the engineers was talking to me and saying they need to keep that clean. You know, they you know, have a truck come by now and then and clean it. Or it will just fill up and it doesn't work. So it sounds really good, but if you don't take care of it, just like so many things in life, it sounds great if you don't take care of it. But I think they put a lot of thought into this project. You know, I mean, that was obvious. I don't know about that three-story thing. I'm not quite sure where, you know, three stories, boy, that does seem like an awful lot, but I guess that's not what we're here to discuss. We're here to discuss the trees. So.
Which we want at least six stories.
You know, that's going to be in the morning shade. I mean, it is a factor we could consider. I mean, you guys know more about the landscape plants than me, but I'm just saying they presented it. It's on the table for us to weigh. But yeah, planning is the one ultimate one for all of this anyway. So yeah, we just.
Right. You can do a lot of amazing things with shade in this area with plants, especially aroma wise. There's a lot of shade loving plants that have incredible aromas and that you can't without the shade. They just won't live here. So there's benefits, you know, there's give and take. I think it would look neat down there. It would look not, I kind of like the idea, but.
Did they say when they were planning to break ground on this? Does anyone know?
Well, this is the third time we've seen it over the last 7 years. So I don't know.
Has it been that long?
Has what been that long?
Seven years.
They've been going away. See all these gray hairs?
Yeah, when I shut up.
It's been a while. Anyway, I'm ready to make a motion unless you guys have any thoughts or questions.
Real quick, Chris, I really like your idea of not having the metal grates around the trees. Even on Hersey there, you can see the grates, and then it's clear that the trees are planted below grade. You know, it's like they probably it all settled, you know, as they did it. And it's like that much below, and it's like, that's just...
Well, it's horrible. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's odd. You know, the advantage of it, though, is then people aren't compacting the root zone of the tree. So
that's why I was suggesting something sharp and pokey there. Like, people don't walk on it. Don't want to poop on it. Just something. Sharp, just like gravel.
Like big granite boulders to keep people from, you know, walking right up near the trunk. I don't know. It's just something I thought of. What do you guys think of the little tiny planters on Van Ness Avenue? They look tiny to me. Maybe they're big.
I didn't have a great sense of that. But and that's where the lindens or something are being planted in them. No, that's not right.
Junin planter, something like that. Anyway. It's going to be in the shade too, so it's not going to bake. I don't know.
Pretty much everything's going to be in the shade.
Okay, well, I make a motion to approve as submitted with the recommendation that the tree grate ordinance be waived and that options be explored for the tree grates.
I'll second that motion.
All those in favor? Aye. Sean.
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you. And if you guys are seeing, so Amy is here for the Rogue Valley Growers Market as well, which I have to recuse myself. I do have 20 minutes. It seemed like the 4th Street was not going to require a whole lot of discussion, but that's my opinion. But
Let's do 4th Street. That way...
Force you real quick. Hang with us a couple more minutes, Amy. All right, we'll do that real quick. Call to order, planning action 2021-00181. This is 264th Street. The owner applicant is Quality Tree Service for Provost Properties LLC. There's a request to remove one box elder at the front of the building at 264th Street. The applicant includes a letter from Quality Tree Service along with an ISA risk assessment form. The tree is a significant lean as well as rotting at the base. Any abstentions, site visits, staff report? I'm sorry, Aaron, anything to add to that?
I would just concur with you that I didn't think this application required a lot of conversation. It seems like a tree that pretty obviously wants to come out.
Yeah.
That's all I would have to say about it.
Well, quote of the week. We'll quote of the week from Kat. We can get there slow. We can get there fast. I'm going to make a motion on this one.
Make a motion to approve as submitted.
I think the tree's been thriving. I think it's pretty good. For decades, you know?
Yeah.
The Deluxe Awning is a historic place. You know, it's
famous.
But even if it didn't have the decay at the base, it's still so close to the building. So.
Need of pruning.
So go ahead, Kat, with what you're going for.
I make a motion to approve as submitted.
I second that.
All those in favor. You don't have to vote for it, Asa. It's okay. All right.
No, I think it should come out.
I don't always vote for stuff.
That's good. We can't. Yeah. We've got a healthy discussion.
With that, Chris, do you want me to go ahead and are you going to exit from here?
I think so. We don't have anything else on the agenda, right?
No, we don't.
Okay. Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Kat, are you going to go ahead and take over chair duties for this?
Find that script thing.
Perfect. Thanks, Chris.
Bye.
Bye, Chris.
All right. Unfortunately, I have the script, so I can't read the numbers. Call to order the public hearing regarding planning action. Let me get that open.
PAT1-2022-00177 for 1554 Webster Street. The applicant is Rogue Valley Growers Market, represented by Amy Gunter. It is SOU for a conditional use permit for the seasonal Rogue Valley Growers Craft Market to operate on the Southern Oregon University campus on a temporary basis. The market would be open on Tuesdays from 9 to 1 from March to November for up to three seasons.
Okay. Any site visits, abstentions, conflicts? Nope. And the staff report, Aaron.
Again, Amy's here to present the application. This is a fairly straightforward application. What you're really evaluating is the tree protection that's proposed. It's unique because there isn't construction. What's being proposed in the area around the vending area is basically painted tree protection to avoid the critical root zone. And more than that, I would go ahead and hand it over to Amy and ask her to go ahead and give her presentation. You're muted, Amy.
Thank you. Okay, let me share my screen again. I do not have a long presentation on this because it is pretty straightforward. But, okay, so this is the site. It's at the corner of Walker and Ashland Street and Stadium. So it's this lot here. In this picture, it looks like there's things being stored there. I believe that this was used as storage when they were constructing this area. There was seemed to be vehicles parked here and equipment and trailers back when these buildings were being constructed. But this is the proposed location. The Growers and Crafters Market is presently located at the National Guard Armory on East Main Street. The National Guard Armory is set to do a major construction project. And so they were going to move to Science Works. Then the school's project happened. And so then the schools moved to Science Works and Rogue Valley Growers and Crafters Market were left with sort of in a lurch, needing a new place to move to. And because this is not on the same parcel of land, it's a separate tax lot than the Science Works parcel, which is on the same parcel of land as the National Guard Armory, they had to get essentially a new conditional use permit for this location. Obviously, this location is very different than the East Main Street location. And one of the biggest concerns was what's the traffic impact going to be? Because it seems like there's a lot of traffic on East Main Street during the Growers and Crafters Market. I think part of that is because of the residential type of neighborhood that you have there. Everybody is pretty much driving there, or a lot of people are driving there. It doesn't have parking, or it doesn't really have good parking. There's about 26 spaces in the lot. And then there's limited street parking. The proposal here is to have, so this is the sort of area, and then this is the tree protection fencing. I'm going to switch my slide to this one. Sorry, it's a little crooked. My scanner did that. So there is a driveway coming off of Walker that will have a banner sign blocking it, directing the traffic to continue down Walker to Webster Avenue or Webster Street. There will be an A-frame on Webster directing people to continue to Stadium. And then we want all the traffic to be off of Stadium where the driveway access is. So there's another A-frame sign here. Then their banner sign is proposed. Off the driveway access, this area is proposed to have a light grading and rocking. The Growers and Crafters Market has been meeting with a very skilled local excavator from the Boxar Family Ranch. And Jesse is working on a grading plan. I'm meeting with them tomorrow because during any site work, grading, dirt work, any equipment like that, I'm asking them to actually put up the orange fencing to keep people out of that area. Because even though the grading is going to be over here and the trees are way over here, like 50 feet away, we just want to make it really clear where the boundaries of excavation can be. So my goal is to meet with Jesse and Jamie, the market manager, to walk through exactly what does the tree protection mean when there is any sort of tractor or thing like that on the site. And then I'll also know more tomorrow about what exactly that all means. But essentially what they have to make it so that it's sort of like forebuying when you go through the site right now. And that's really not good for growers, crafters, people walking or anything like that. You gotta, it's a little mucky, slippery, slidey. So they're going to fix those things. So the plan is to have a lightly graded parking area, and then SOU ground crew will spray with like the football field paint the parking area out, and then where the tree protection fencing will be. We don't want to have tree, or where the tree protection zones will be. We don't want to have fencing to prevent people from the growers market from actually using those trees. If you've ever been to the Hawthorne Park Market in Medford, a big feature of that market is that it's right in the park amongst trees, right? So that's sort of what we're going to go for. Once the grading area is done and then the lines are spray painted out, the vendors all know where they go, and the market is run pretty much like a well-oiled machine for about 6 hours a day, once a week for their market. Then they try to have very little impact. Like the signs will be up and then they'll go away and they'll come back in the morning of each market. Ideally, this site is temporary, and seeing what happens with the school progression. But we essentially proposed for a 3-season approval. And then if they need to reevaluate, or maybe this site is an amazing success and everyone in the community thinks that this should be the location, we'll reapply for a conditional use permit at that date and time. But essentially, it's a painting protection zone, long-term, any site work happening on site, like these trees, these guys, these guys, these guys, and this guy would have actual orange fencing while they're out there working. That concludes my presentation.
Where do the vendors park? Because currently a lot of them park just right behind their booth and it's all.
Mm-hmm. So they will have some, depending on what they've got for their booth, they will either park near their booth outside of these tree zones, or they have some vendor parking area here. And then there is on-street parking on Stadium as well.
Okay, because I just drove Stadium earlier today and it was all yellow curbs. So that's going to be changed?
Well, there were signs. I don't know. I thought that it was going to remain on-street parking. I know that's been going back and forth because of the university dorms. But I'll check. So essentially they're going from 26 parking spaces to 80. So there's a pretty substantial increase in the number of parking spaces that will be provided.
Yeah, because at the current location, Whit Street is a super popular for people to park. So I think Stadium, hopefully people could park there.
Yeah, I'll have to look at, I have some photos of it. I'll have to look and see what is showing there.
Yeah, it is yellow curb.
Okay.
And will this be controlled so that students won't be using this as parking? Is that going to be, because I see that the student has a parking lot just beside that. Is that right?
Yes, there is a, I don't know who all uses that parking area. I think it's more associated for the McNeil Hall and the people in the digital media center and maybe some event stuff. The student parking is primarily in that parking loop that is between the buildings. We hadn't thought about like barricading the entrance during non-market hours. That is something that, you know, maybe we should consider. I hadn't considered it. So that might actually, you know, I think that you make a good point, Kat, that we might want to do that. I mean, I don't feel like people are using it now, really, and you could because of the conditions of the soil. So I don't think it will be a problem, but I can't really speak to it. It's definitely something we should consider, though.
Yeah, I think a lot of people just think that's private property. They don't think it's SOU. But
once it's marked for parking, though, and they see other people parking there on market days, that I imagine will probably change. It's a shame that there's not going to be as good at bike access to this as there is to the current farmers market, which is going to force a lot of people to actually have to drive, because that's actually a pretty dangerous part of town to get to. You can come up Walker from the bike path, but that area riding along the cars there is actually not that much fun because people are always opening their doors on you. So it's a shame it's not quite as bike friendly as the current location, but there's not much you can do about that.
There are more, I guess, formal bike lanes, but its proximity to the bike path is further. Yeah. But there are, there's the protected or the lane on Ashland Street. And then I think Walker is a shared street. It might have a bike path. But like you said, people, I think, can park between the bike path and the curb. And yeah, it's not exactly the best. But it has a bus stop. Hopefully, you know, there's alternative modes of transportation. Hopefully that people will employ.
Yeah, and the farmers market's not running during periods of time when there's school traffic conflict, because Walker is like a massive parking lot during school drop-off times.
So the market hours are technically outside of what's called peak hours. The market hours are roughly 9 to 1, and then they set up before 9 and they tear down after 1. But the access from Walker will not be utilized. It will be blocked with the banner sign, and I think there might be a chain there. So that won't be used. And then Walker at that part, I don't believe has any on-street parking. I'd have to look. But so there's no vehicular access to the site technically from Walker. It's coming from Ashland Street to Stadium, or Webster to Stadium, which is off of Walker. I think that the vendors, you know, it's hard to say where everybody's coming from, but they're either turning at the controlled intersection and going down Walker to Webster, or they're coming through the controlled intersection and then turning down Stadium and going into the market that way.
Hmm. So what we're supposed to figure out is if the tree protection, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if the tree protection is adequate, is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, and the tree protection's going to be painted.
So during any site work to grade the site out to essentially smooth it so that it's not a muddy pit and that it's not all rutted, they'll do like the orange fencing. And then once that comes down, essentially they'll just be painting on the ground so that the booths, and if people park near their booths, they stay out of that area. And everyone is going, you know, all the vendors will be made aware of what that is, but they want to have it be more like a park where you can sit in the trees when you're, you know, got your stuff from the growers market and you can cut through the trees. No fencing. Right.
Okay. It will be fenced when they're doing the work.
Right.
But then once that's, then it'll be up to people to, okay.
Yeah.
I get it.
Are there any more questions for Amy, and is there anyone else that's providing testimony for this application?
Amy, if people aren't respecting the painted lines with their vehicles, as I imagine they're going to not, because a painted line, everyone drives over painted lines all day long. Is there any plan, like maybe one of those, you know, like little tiny posts with like kind of scalloping rope that could be implemented if that becomes a problem?
I think that absolutely could be implemented. I don't see any reason why it couldn't. So that, yeah, there was actually some like physical barrier. I know that the market runs on a pretty tight budget, and the transportation impact analysis may have very well decimated, you know, in this process, the fees and my time and all that really took a bite out of them. But, you know, if it's posts and like a ribbon or a string or something, I think that totally makes sense. Maybe not for all the trees, because some of them are pretty far removed. But I think when I walked the site with Jesse tomorrow, and we will have some tape measures and ground paint, and we'll start marking things out, like the ones along Ashland Street, I can see that being very valuable to those. And then probably the ones around the corner to the stadium access, or to the walker access, I'm sorry. The ones that are in the middle, if you saw the trees, you'd probably wonder why on earth are they even keeping those? And it's because we just didn't want to do a tree removal permit as part of this application. So I think that that's definitely a recommendation they would highly consider.
Is cool. there someone that is in charge of the place that if somebody does that, that they would go, hey, you're not supposed to, I mean, everybody will be aware that they're not supposed to do that.
Yeah. So how the, I don't want to get it wrong because I'm not a Rogue Valley Growers and Crafters Market member, but they're essentially a board run 501(c)(3) organization. And that organization has a manager, Jamie Griffin, who I've been working with. So if people have issues, they go to Jamie, and then Jamie as the manager deals with them. And then, you know, bigger issues rise to the level of the board. The person who did the tree plan is on the board, and he's a vendor. He's one of the plant people who sell things at the market. So that's who created the tree plan. So there's people on the either board. The fellow who did the plan is Doug Hormel. He's on the board and he's a vendor. So they've got a lot of people that are crossovers, and that they really, you know, they came at this from the landscape perspective and tree preservation perspective.
Yeah, you don't want to mess with Doug. I know him.
Good. You know Doug? Great. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think, you know, between Jamie and then they have a very clear organizational structure. They have a lot of documents. They seem to deal with issues really well, considering, you know, it's a sort of rogue group of people that come together to sell products once a week.
Right.
So they do a really good job of like managing that organization. And I don't think there'll be problems, but like Asa said, there might be a really quick, easy, non-invasive solution that won't be a painted line.
Mm-hmm. If it's necessary, then.
Yeah.
So maybe that's something, Asa, you could do if you wanted to present something to us, say I approve it with, you know, the idea of if things get out of hand, you have to put up, you know, whatever barricade you're talking about. So,
yeah.
And I'm not looking at the comment period deadline, but I believe we'll be talking about it tomorrow. So I might be able to even provide staff with a little more clarity tomorrow as to, like, this is where we would put the fence post with ribbon. So I would definitely accept a recommendation that be conditioned, and then we can, you know, come up with the plan for that.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Any further questions?
Did you, Amy, mention when that is would get started there?
Yesterday.
Oh, is it already already there?
No.
That was the plan.
They wanted to open, but timelines, you know, with the land use, and then we had to get the traffic impact analysis. It was the fastest traffic impact analysis I've ever been on the receiving end, but it still took weeks because they have to count the cars. Then they got to do all this data analysis. So essentially they're hoping that like the day the comment period ends, the city sets their 6-day timer and then they can write a decision. And I think the soonest it can happen is like April 22nd. but they like want to go because May 1, it's not exactly May 1, whatever the first market May date is, they want to be at this location because they are leaving the armory. Mm-hmm. So they're on a very tight timeline.
Right. Thanks.
You bet.
Okay. At this time, I'm going to close the public hearing.
Thanks, Amy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any discussion items that people want to bring up?
Yeah, I just wonder if the market board thought about the parking lot of Science Works, because that's already set up, painted lines and everything. It's a Pinot. You don't have to be out in the field. And then there's the field of Willow Wind, and or the field at the middle school down below everything. I don't know, just think there's other options. But at the same time, you know, that's cool that SAU is willing to have it there. I don't know if SAU gets a chunk of money. I'm not quite sure how that works, but sounds like they've already got the ball rolling on that direction and they're set on it. My only concern is just I wouldn't not cross a painted line. I really think that's going to be an issue right off the bat. Everyone's just going to be like, why can't we cross this line? You know, the trees out in the middle, it's labeled as a walkway, but that's where everyone's going to be driving to set up their stuff. So I don't know if putting logs around the tree, you know, I think the tree production is going to be an issue over time. And again, it's SAU. I mean, if they just said, hey, we want to cut down all these trees and build up another dorm, it's like, that could happen. So I really like the trees along Walker Avenue. I think those are awesome. So I'm glad those are all kind of in their own protection zone. They're not isolated from one another.
Yeah. Well, that's not a bad suggestion, Asa, having logs. I wonder if there's some logs that are coming down from all those dead pines that we could use.
That would be a great idea. I mean, I don't know if someone was coming back from the bar or walking across the field and they tripped on a log. I don't know if that would.
That's what I'm thinking.
Serves them right for being drunk in public.
Derek and I discussed that actually, and we're talking about the pros and cons of we were talking about it in the context of railroad ties. But the exact same, it took us about as long as it did for you guys to bring up the tripping hazard concern.
Yeah.
And as we discussed it further, where I started to go with it was thinking about it in terms of, it's not that this is going to be a construction site where vehicles are showing up every day. I mean, it is a weekly event for a few hours. And when I started thinking about it in terms of the limited impact of the duration and time, I started to feel a little better about it, because to balance it against the tripping hazard of logs or railroad ties or whatever else seemed problematic.
You know, to follow up on what you just said, also, I mean, if something happens, these people probably all know each other pretty much. After doing this for a time, it seems like they could be told, you know, they're fairly conscientious people from the ones that I've met. Seems like it would be very simple to say, you don't do this because it affects the trees, blah, blah, blah. And it just seems like it'd be a real easy verbal, don't do it.
Yeah.
I mean, we're all told not to jaywalk, but we all do too.
Well, the public isn't going to be driving over those areas, so you're mostly talking about the farmers market vendors themselves.
Yeah. Right, I don't think the public is going to, they're not going to be in there, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's something that we could mention in the motion, is that there's really clear guidelines with the vendors about where they should be driving in terms of impacting the route systems. And if it becomes clear that ground lines are not being respected, that there needs to be some kind of physical barrier clearly and brightly marked that's temporary, that can be put up and taken down with each market so that there's not a tripping hazard for all those drunken, disorderly students after hours.
Well, in the middle of the day, that can still happen. But
well, yeah, but if it's bright and pink and ribbon or whatever, you know.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, there's suing possibilities and people getting hurt left and right. I mean, someone could trip over the curb just getting in there. Yeah, I guess that's.
Yeah, but that's SIU's liability, not ours. We're here to protect the trees.
Yeah, the tree. Yeah.
All right. Well, it sounds like we're all on the same page that if it does become a problem, they find a solution.
A solution. Yeah.
A way to enforce the protection zone so it is actually protecting the trees. Yeah. Do you want to verbalize that one, Asa?
I think you just verbalized it better than I did.
Do I need to repeat it, Aaron? Or
please, no. Yep.
Yeah. Okay, I make a motion to approve the tree protection plan as submitted with the caveat that if the tree protection zones are not being respected by users, that physical temporary barriers are put up during stall hours. That sound good?
Just to me.
I second that. Yeah.
Yeah. That was great.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right.
Okay, is that all of our deliberations tonight, Aaron?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Is Tree of the Year still voting still on, or is
that
Tree of the Year is still voting? The last we discussed this, we were going to wrap up voting at the end of March, and then our presentation to council will be the first week of April, which corresponds with Arbor Day. Do I have that right, Peter? You're giving me a look like I have the week wrong.
Yeah, it looks like April 1st is Arbor Day.
But Oregon celebrates it as the first full week of April, was my understanding.
Yeah, I think Peter mentioned the 8th would be.
I was thinking of the 8th for the for our tree planting.
And I think that's a great idea, Peter. I'm so glad that you have that date already established. So I'm glad we're doing great. That.
Yeah. So let's plan on that then. And like I say, I'll be in touch.
So right now, it's the large redwood that is the leader with 11 votes, and then an oak with 10, the sweet gum with 8, the sequoia with 6, and the cork tree with 5.
We do love our oaks in this town. They always seem to win. Right.
Where's the cork tree?
That's the one on 4th Street that, you know, just kind of up from Fearless. Super cool.
Yeah.
Cool. I keep nominating it. I keep losing. That's all right.
There's another cork tree in town I saw the other day. I want to say it was Nutley. It was somewhere where it was like, or no, maybe it was Iowa Street. It was something where it was like, wow, there's another cork tree. It's like, whoa, they're just so uncommon. And I don't know why, because they look so cool.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think I know that one up off of Holly on like Kearney or one of.
Yeah, it was somewhere. Yeah.
Okay, I think we're done, right? Okay. What do I say? Officially close this meeting.
I guess you could ask for a motion for an adjournment, but normally we just wrap up and call it good.
Okay. I make a motion to adjourn the meeting. Any seconds?
I heard it.
All right, all in favor.
Sounds good, everyone.
All right. Have a good night.
Take care.